Hello and welcome to Creepypasta's Tome in the Dark. Today I will be reading again from Reddit, from the subreddit of r/nosleep. This story is by u/faintinggoat. I hope you enjoy the episode. How to Survive Camping, The Little Girl, by u/faintinggoat. I run a private campground. I have a list of rules to keep everyone safe and in them. I promise my campers that the lady with extra eyes will help them, that you can trust her. I think the first part is true. I think she will help them. Trusting her, however, was a mistake. If you're new here, you should really start at the beginning. If you're totally lost, this may help. I know a lot of stories. There's patterns to them. And once you know those patterns, you can sometimes better understand these behaviors of these things. They're not human. There's a story about a woman that is cursed into the shape of a monstrous serpent. A hero rescues her by braving the horrors of her castle, and each night he throws an article of clothing over her head until the curse is broken. Then they leave together. She earns his trust, and then she takes everything he has and flees, leaving him desolate and betrayed. Just because someone is cursed doesn't mean they were ever innocent. Just because you saved someone doesn't mean they're not your enemy. I think our natures may be less manable than I hoped. The lady with extra eyes has betrayed my family in the past, and perhaps this is just how she is. Perhaps she can no more help it than she can prevent becoming the lady in chains. And as for me, perhaps I cannot change my nature either. I do intend to kill the lady with extra eyes, even though I do not think she is the cause behind the bad year. I think she's yet another victim to it, and she won't stop until the bad year ends, and I have no leads with which to go on. So I will fight to protect my own life. Just as I was unwilling to sell my land and instead fought the man with no shadow, I am also unwilling to simply die. Percha's warning is an impossibility. I cannot save them all. I have already failed in that. I am going to focus on keeping myself alive and stopping the bad year, and after that, well, Christmas is still a ways off, despite what the craft stories think. Speaking of craft stories, we tried to fix the man with the skull, with the cup skull, cup. With the skull cup, skull cup. That was super awkward to write. Maybe I should try out a random name, even post from that list that someone has compiled until one seems to fit. This week is Ansel, or should I hold a poll? Except that's how I'd wind up to name, like, Scully McSkullface. I don't know how to go about this. I'm not sure I can go about this. As he said, if I knew, it might not work. I think names just evolve for these creatures. Maybe I just have to live with writing awkward sentences. It's not like I don't already abuse commas and other grammatical rules. Ironic that I'm really bad at following the rules of grammar, huh? In my defense, English teachers aren't known to kill people, usually. Anyway, someone came out to help fix it. One of my campers that has been following these accounts had an idea and brought a friend with them that had some specialized knowledge. They mixed up these plaster in some blood in it and fit the two pieces back together. We decided to refill it using the recipe, but we didn't have any blood from what was already there. It did have blood on it, but the blood was on a sharp edges where it spilt, and I think that was actually the lady with extra eyes blood from the splatter pattern. I think he took the broken half of the cup and jacked her in the face with it. It was all we had to go on, though, so we left that in there. I got blood forcibly taken by inviting my brother over for dinner and then stabbing him. He was very mad. And then I used my blood as willingly given. My plan was to give the man with the skull cup someone of it to drink. But the cup just fell apart in my hands as I took it to him, and all the blood spill on the ground. And now I need a new rug in my living room because I can't get the stain out of it. My guests were at a loss on what to do after that, so they brought some t-shirts and other souvenirs from the camp store and went home. I suppose I'll just have to get a replacement skull, like everyone suggested in the comments. I admit, I haven't made any progress towards securing it yet. I had a more pressing problem to deal with first. Remember how I said that I felt there were still spiders in my house? My house is fairly well protected from inhuman things. We've built up our defenses over generations out of necessity. Even I'm not sure what all is in here. My dad replaced some trim around the front door once and found talismans nailed to the wall underneath. They're still there. We have no idea how old they are, but it seems potent to leave them alone. So while I thought I was seeing spiders in the house, I didn't think it was that big of a problem. Sure, there were a lot when the lady invaded the house, but she brought those with her, right? And she broke down the wall so they could get in, right? I guess the one that escaped from the Brussels sprouts a while ago has been multiplying. Some innate senses woke me up in the night. There was no outward indication as to why I wake up, so for a moment I lay there and stared at the ceiling. The little girl was crying outside my window, so nothing was unusual there. Perhaps I simply couldn't sleep. As rare as that was, then I heard a faint clicking noise. The fridge, perhaps? I've certainly had to conduct some prosuchia maintenance on it before to get to shut up. I sat up and tried to swing my legs off the bed to go investigate. Tried. There was something wrapped tightly around them, binding them together. In a panic, I flipped the bedside lamp on and watched in horror as a multitude of spiders skittered away and over the edge of the bed, a rippling black and brown wave that quickly vanished out of sight. I left behind a shimmering white web of spider silk, entombing my ankles and shins. I admit it. I screamed. Then I grabbed the knife, yes, that knife, from the nightstand and frantically hacked at the spider webs. They parted easily, and I jumped up onto my bed and slapped at my leg in a frenzy, almost hyperventilating, until my skin stung. And even in a panic, I had to admit that there weren't any spiders on me. Then my hair brushed the back of my neck, and the whole process of me slapping at myself and shrieking sorry all over again. Look, I know I've dealt with worse stuff in the past and handled it, but that is crap of a way to wake up. I held spider spray in my garage. Quite a bit of it, actually. I went to the warehouse store and cleaned them out after I realized from the hospital I only had to get there, and believe me, it was hard to work up the nerve to jump off the bed. Even though the spiders had fled, I envisioned them hiding under the bed, waiting for them to jump off. My mouth was dry with fear as I woke up the nerve. I ran through my plan mentally in my head, jumped from the bed, grabbed my shoes from the floor, run for the garage. I was faster than the spiders. I could do this. I jumped. I stood. I stooped. I grabbed my shoes, trying hard not to look around. I didn't need to know if the spiders were spilling out from under my bed. I really didn't. Then I hurried from the hallway, flipping on the lights, and pulled my shoes off as I went. If I had to squish from some artichokes, it wasn't going to be with my bare feet. If I had to squish some arachnids, it wasn't going to be with my bare feet. My plan fell apart at the living room, flipped on the lights. The split skull lay on the coffee table. The man with the skull cup lay on the sofa, his arms crossed over his chest, just as we'd left him. Except he was covered with a blanket of spiders now. They webbed him up to his waist. I guess the lady with extra eyes wasn't keen on taking risks. She'd let her brethren immobilize us both, and then moved in for the kill. The spiders rotated to face me as I stood frozen in the hallway. Then they moved as one, rippling waves falling from the sofa into the floor. Their legs clicked on the hardwood as I whispered of branches in the wind. The noise came from behind us as well. I was trapped between two groups of spiders. I could stay where I was. Then they'd overwhelm me, and I remember their bites and what I had done to me last time. So I jumped on the nearest piece of furniture, which was the love seat. The spiders swarmed around the base while I climbed to stand on the back, watching as the first line of their numbers began to scale the aged fabric. I brought myself a few minutes in which to call for help. I always grab my cell phone when I flee my bedroom for any reason. I cannot imagine how many people we've saved by their invention, my own life included. I call the old sheriff. Spiders, I said. So many spiders. I need someone to help clear them out. He said that he'd be there as fast as he could and hung up. Then I played "The Floor is Lava" around my living room, except instead of lava, the floor was spiders. And I wasn't pretending. They swarmed the coffee table and climbed up after me. I stomped on them until their numbers threatened to overwhelm me. Then I jumped over to the hassock and stand on that, forcing the spiders to reconvene their swarms and climb up, and I stomped on them for a bit, and then jumped to something else. There wasn't enough to simultaneously cover all the furniture in my room, so the strategy held out for a while. It was exhausting, though. And I felt my self-control was fraying by the second. I kept repeating in my mind my strategy. Keep moving. Don't panic. I could not panic. I had survived as long as I stayed calm. Keep moving. Don't panic. Keep moving over and over again. Until I heard a vehicle pull up in my driveway and I could have wept with relief. I told the old sheriff over the phone that the door was locked and I wouldn't be able to come unlock it, so he'd have to make his own way in, except I expected him to shoot the lock off. Instead, he kicked the door in. It slammed into the wall, the doorknob carving in the plaster and sticking. Holding the door open as my rescuer came in striding through the gaping door. It wasn't the old sheriff. It was his wife. I've always wanted to do that, she said pleasantly, wrenching the door free off the wall and entering. It swung limply on the broken hinges, making a pitiful attempt to latch, and finally swaying to a stop. The old sheriff's wife put her heel up to stop it. The spiders froze at the entrance. I, too, stood frozen. I, in surprise for a moment, and then tentatively put one foot and squashed the nearest spider. Over by the door, the old sheriff's wife held up two cans of spider spray and tilted her head, her eyes glinting with malice. The spiders fled, and she grimly chased after them, brandishing cans in both hands, spraying it liberally over the corners and the cracks they vanished into as they fled. She only stopped her assault when both canisters sputtered and died. Then she discarded the empty bottles by absently tossing them aside and letting them roll away across the wood. I was still on the coffee table, stunned by this turn of events. His wife isn't the sort of thing you just have show up like this. I was expecting your husband, I said. He was having trouble with his prosthetic, so I came instead. At that point, I realized that I was still standing on the coffee table, and thought to get off and offer her some tea and maybe some cookies. When she accepted, and then she went out to her car and came back with her basket of yarn and spent the rest of the night trying to teach me how to crochet. It kept the spiders from coming back, I guess. After that, I decided it was time to move out for a bit. My aunt volunteered her house. She had a guest bedroom, and we could put the man with the skull cup on the sofa. I packed up a week's worth of clothing and moved myself in. When I went back for the man with the skull cup, I figured I need an extra hand to move him. But turns out that he's surprisingly light, unnaturally so. I actually lift him by myself. Of course, he's a bit taller than me, So doing so is extremely unwieldy. And I just kind of had to drag him around instead. No, I did not drag him by his ankles all the way to my aunt's house. I considered it, but I got the wheelbarrow out instead. Living with my aunt worked for a couple days. I replaced the front door to my house, but otherwise stayed out of it. The guest bed was softer than I was used to, and it was harder to sleep at first, in part because I'm used to listening to the little girl outside my window all my life. I had a similar experience when I went away to college, but at least there was noise on the campus of some kind. But here on the campground, all night is quiet, and the girl's absence was unnerving. Then, just when I thought I was about to fall asleep without her crying at my window, she found me. I think I woke, not because she was here, making the noise outside the guest room, bedroom, but because it was different from what I was used to. For a brief moment, I wondered if my aunt had left the TV on. Then I placed the noise as coming from the window instead of down the hallway. I sat up in bed and listened. She wasn't crying. She was whispering. I slipped out of bed and crept carefully to the window. I crouched close to the wall, hidden beneath the base of the frame, just as I had with when I was a child and the little girl could still speak to me. I listened until the words resolved themselves, an endless litany muttered over and over, a frantic refrain, touched by fear and rage. "You left me," she whispered. "You left me, you 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 left me." I slowly stood up. Everything in me screamed that I shouldn't, but I needed to know. I had to see what she was doing outside the window. An old land. Staying alive means comforting things. An old land. Staying alive means confronting the things you would rather not face. I drew back the curtains. The little girl stood there, with her forehead pressed against the glass, her fingers clutched against the edges of the window frame. Her eyes were wide and bloodshot, her pupils dilated. And her round face was framed by her straw-colored hair. The glass was fogged by her breath of, by the breath of her mouth and nose. She flexed her fingers and nails, pricking the edges of the glass. Cracks appeared, thin lines that cracked as they spread. I turned and ran. I grabbed that dang knife on my way out the bedroom. Out down the hallway to my aunt's room, I flipped on the lights and I stuck my head in. "Auntie," I cried, "we've got a problem." I will say this about my family. We react pretty well to being woken abruptly in the night. My aunt was out of bed before she was even fully awake, I think, and grabbed the shotgun she kept near her bed. Yeah, my family likes shotguns. It's a thing. It's the girl I said. Guns haven't worked in the past. She grunts, but didn't put the gun aside. Hopefully thinking, I guess. She asked about the knife, and I told her so far it's been effective against unnatural things, but we didn't know what the little girl was capable of. I'm the only one that survived letting her inside the house. And I hadn't seen how she killed my cousin. The man with no shadow had pulled me away as quickly as he could. "She wants me to return to the house," I said breathlessly. "I could go out to the garage and make a run for it." My auntie was skeptical that would work. The little girl wasn't following the rules we were familiar with anymore. She was trying to get in. That's What's to say she'd leave me alone once I was outside? From the bedroom came another loud crack of the glass, as the glass continued to fracture. We barricaded the living room. My auntie suggested she wasn't making progress on breaking her way in, so perhaps she could be slowed along enough for dawn and the best and the beast to arrive. We'd leave an exit to open the garage so I could try to make a run for it. If this failed, I agreed, and we went to shove the bookcases to the doorway. Another loud crack came from the bedroom, like fists being slammed into glass. I heard small shards hitting the floor. She'd broken through. I acted on instinct. I sprinted down the hallway and slammed the door to the bedroom shut, just in time to see the little girl putting her leg over the edge of the window frame to climb inside. Then I just held onto the doorknob, desperately bracing myself to hold the door shut, while yelling at my aunt to get the bookcase ready to block the hallway. The door shook in its frame. She slammed her fist on it again, and it creaked on impact. She wasn't trying to open it. She was trying to break it down. Tensively, I let go of the doorknob and backed away, wearily watching as she pounded at it, one fist after another, in steady attempts of blows. The wood groaned under the assault. My house is infested with spiders that are out to kill me, I screamed at her. Maybe you could do something about that. I returned to my living room to help my aunt with the bookcase. Perhaps this plan could work, I said. I didn't say what I was thinking. That little girl was growing steadily more violent by the minute. That her attack was growing stronger, and that the nose we heard echoing underneath underneath her consecutive beating on the door was that the wood was splintering. We almost had the bookshelf in place when we just needed to tip it over. My aunt stepped back, and I thought I was going to get a better grip, so I stayed up and braced myself to push. With one final blow, the door shattered. That's when my auntie hit me in the back of the head with the stock of her shotgun. I don't think I was unconscious for long, but it only takes seconds to make a decision, and perhaps a handful more to act on it. Dying takes a little longer, but it can still only be a matter of minutes, especially when your internal organs have been scooped out and scattered across the floor, much like a child with thrown sand in the air and see how it lands. And that was enough to satisfy the little girl. When I woke up, she was gone, and I was the only human left alive in the house. Everything after that is a blur. I called my brother at some point, and he called the rest of the family. The police arrived, and they promised to take care of securing a death certificate that had an innocent reason. Natural causes. That little falsehood didn't matter. My family will remember how she died, the same way as my mother. A couple members of staff volunteered to clean up the mess, with the offer of a hefty bonus. I thought about raising the house, but that's not how we do things. I'm pretty sure we need it for someone. As the campground called my bloodline home in one way or another. I returned to my house sometimes in the afternoon. I had no choice. I hadn't even begun to formulate a strategy for how I could survive the night, with the little girl forcing me to remain here, and with the spiders waiting for me. My entire body felt numb, and part of me thought that maybe it didn't matter anymore, Maybe I should just give up, give the lady with extra eyes what she wanted. Sooner or later, this land would claim my life. After all, would it really be so bad if it were the former? The smell of peppermint struck me as I walked through the front door. It hung thick in the air, but not pleasantly so. I drew in sharp breaths as it filled my lungs, and it felt good, like cold water on a summer day. Leaves peeked out of the cracks between the walls and the trim, the separate tips vivid green against the plaster. I ventured further into my house. It grew through the edges of the window, frames between the gaps on the aged hardwood floors. It sprouted in every crevice and cranny, calling the air with its scent. I didn't find a single spider as I inspected the home, nor did they appear that evening when I sat in my living room with the lights on, waiting for them to attack. I couldn't bring myself to speak it to the little girl at first, not after what she did, but the strangeness of the peppermint, which continued to live as I found it, neither growing nor dying from lack of light and water, finally forced me to act. I came and sat by the window, leaning against the wall, and I listened to her weep for a while. Finally, I spoke. "Do you do this?" I asked softly. "Do you cause the peppermint to grow?" You came home, she whispered, and then sniffed. Her voice cracked, and she began to cry once more. "I'm the campground manager. I'm little more than that, however. I'm the owner of this of old land, and my family is bound to it and cursed by it. We are doomed to die here. For most of us, that time comes far too soon for our liking, and we die fighting for every second, screaming our rage over the unfairness of our end to an indifferent world. But very rarely we choose which way we die. I do not think my aunt anticipated this end, but she chose it, her life to save mine. Her funeral is tomorrow. We'll bury her in the family graveyard, next to my uncle." Thank you for tuning in to Creepypasta in the Dark. I hope you enjoyed the video today. The story we read is called How to Survive Camping, The Little Girl, by u/Fainting Ghosts on r/No Sleep. Hope you enjoyed the video.